Dave Sinopdorp here with Matt Ford and Jonathan Harding. We go to Freiburg and the Ruhr Valley completely falls apart. We're going to break down Borussia Dortmund's problems. We're going to break down Schalke's problems. But most importantly, we're going to go into the title race with 10 games to go. And with that in mind, let's start this week in Augsburg. So two things I've taken away from a week after our Freiburg trip. One, Freiburg made winning 5-1 cool.
Two.
And two, it seems that when we're in Freiburg, everything else around Freiburg completely falls apart. Because Borussia Dortmund, they did win last weekend when we were in Freiburg. They beat Leverkusen 3-2. But this weekend, going to Augsburg, the same team we watched concede 5 goals to Freiburg, they go to Augsburg and they lose 2-1. Dongwon Ji probably has maybe one of the best games of his career.
I mean, the second goal is...
I mean, it'd be ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
But Matt, they have won 2 games in 2019, Borussia Dortmund. What has happened to this team?
I think a lot of truth can be taken from what Matthias Sammer said after the game. Matthias Sammer, as we know, is... this season been in a dual role, really, hasn't he? He's been external advisor at Borussia Dortmund and also a very erudite and articulate, interesting pundit
on Eurosport on
Friday nights, which has been really, really interesting to listen to for anyone who's been watching Bundesliga games on Friday nights. And following the defeat at Augsburg, the 2-1, he absolutely tore in to Borussia Dortmund, which is quite intriguing given that he actually has this sort of unofficial position at the club. He tore into the players saying that they didn't lose the game on the pitch, they lost it in their heads. He had a go at them saying that it was particularly the younger players who had been sucked into some of the hype.
Granted, I mean, it was Dan Axel Zagadou and it was
Ashraf Hakimi
who gave away the goals.
I thought Jadon Sancho also had a poor game, also guilty of giving the ball away in dangerous situations. And those were particularly the three that Matthias Sammer pointed out, and he added to that the fact that Augsburg ran 10 kilometres further on average than Borussia Dortmund.
You know, to go on that point, really, I was looking up because I saw that they ran 10 kilometres more. There was only one game in 2019 so far that Borussia Dortmund has actually outrun the other team. Now, I don't normally put too much weight in kilometres, but when you run 10 kilometers less, that's a lot of distance that you're leaving behind another team.
It is difficult. It's so difficult to be able to even take a side on this whole debate, because on the one hand, yes, they are young players, and Sammer, he did acknowledge that. They are young players. They are in this position for the first time in their careers. They're in a position which this season, I think even Borussia Dortmund, never actually expected themselves to ever be
in. That's a good point, yeah. And
yet there they were, I can't remember exactly how long ago it was, but 9 points ahead of Bayern Munich. And suddenly they're feeling Bayern breathing down the necks. And, I mean, some of the actual errors that were made, I'm thinking in particular of the Hakimi pass into the centre ahead of Augsburg's second goal. Now, it's irrelevant how brilliant the finish actually is ultimately.
Because it's an invitation.
Why on earth is Ashraf Hakimi turning round in a right-back position and playing that pass into the centre? I don't know what combination of factors have built up in his head that, yeah, you can argue over the weeks gone by, has this idea built up that we are champions, we're going to win the Bundesliga for the first time in six years, because that's what the press hype and all the public hype has been all about. How much has that gone to the players' heads? I don't know. How much does that actually influence the passes, mate? I don't know.
I think it's more a case of, because they're so young, I think it's a case of, oh no, we might win the league. What do we do? We've never been in this situation before. Rather than, oh, we're going to win the league. You know, I think it's less arrogant and more surprise.
I'm not trying to say that it's all arrogant. I don't think it's that at all, but I think definitely the pressure's got them in one way or another, and probably in several ways. The fact that I think it especially comes to the fore when they come up against teams who are in a relegation battle. I think we talked about this
we were both working and watching
the game on Friday, and they're up against a team there who are absolutely fighting to get away from the relegation zone. A team which we saw a couple of weeks ago against Bayern have actually got something about them.
Some determination.
But then again, we also saw them frapping last week. They can also collapse.
Collapse, yeah.
But at home, Augsburg are a different animal, aren't they? And this was definitely a completely new experience. A lot of those young Borussia Dortmund players up against a team who were, yeah, they were physical, they pressed high, they were aggressive, they used every trick in the book they could to disrupt Borussia Dortmund's play. And fair play to them.
I just ask myself, though, because we've talked about this before, but, you know, this line of they're a young team and they need to learn and they weren't ready for it. And, you know, what Sammer said after the game, you know, Roman Bucky said after the game, we just weren't prepared for the fight. We weren't ready for the aggressive nature that Augsburg were bringing. Now, that is true, I think, you know, from that performance. But if you look at that in the context of Borussia Dortmund's season, I don't think that's an excuse. Because if you track back, that's been the same reason since the Hoffenheim game, where they blew it in the last 25 minutes. And they said, yeah, we weren't ready for that comeback. We weren't ready for that up-tempo performance in the end or that aggression.
Oh, yeah, but you can't say that. Then they have another reminder away at Nuremberg.
Then they had the same situation against Nuremberg. It's not the first time this has happened. And how many times do you let it happen before you say, maybe this is not a case of, oh, they're young and inexperienced. It's just that they're not proactive. They're not making a change that they already recognize.
Or at least those in positions to give them instructions not being proactive enough.
Is that another question as well?
That's another question. To what extent has Sebastian Kale been able to access their players and prepare them for this mentally? Lucien Favre the same. Watching Borussia Dortmund at the moment, you just don't get the impression that, yes, they're young, and yes, we can accept a lot of that and give them a little bit of a free
room
pass
to develop.
But given that the people in charge, Favre, Sebastian Kale, they know it. They've been there before. They should know. They should know better. And
pass that on.
And you don't get the impression that that's been passed on.
Yeah, you take players. It. If Favre keeps saying game by game, but, you know, you've got to translate that from something
game by
like,
game, they're getting worse and worse.
You've got to translate that from a statement into a mentality. And I do wonder why that Borussia Dortmund keep making these individual mistakes, because I think you can say some of it's due to development, sure. But, I mean, take the Zagadou error for the first goal. Why doesn't he just put it out? Why does he have to feel like he has to do something special out there? It's almost the same mistake as Diallo on the cross for the Hoffenheim game. It's almost identical. The only difference is that Zagadou is further wide and closer. But it's the same situation. Just be safe. Just play sensible football. Is there a need to do more? You know, and that's what I think frustrates so many people, because when Dortmund have been good this season, they have been unplayable. And I think that confidence, they are a confidence team. They look 100% a confidence team, and that's what so often happens with younger players. They ride the wave when they play so well, they feel unbeatable, and the first moment that you play a team like Augsburg or Nuremberg away, and you get difficult, and they're in your face, and they elbow you, and they tackle you late, and the ref doesn't give it, and you only get five corners, and the keeper has a blinder. You have to have something extra about you. And if you don't, you have to look to your teammates. That's another part of this conversation. The more experienced players in this team, they have to say, you know what, guys, you're only 18. It's okay. We'll take you with you. We'll look after you in this situation. And Dortmund haven't had that either. Where's the Axel Witsel? Where's Delaney?
I think it is difficult to accuse him of that. I mean, I do totally agree. I think you're looking for Thomas Delaney and Axel Witsel and Marco Reus to step up. But
Götze has.
In fairness, yes, he has.
Berkey has.
Witsel and Delaney have been in the squad for less than a year, been in the club for less than a year. Marco Reus has been consistently without injury, largely, in the team for the first time in his career, probably altogether. So for them as well, I think it's a new position. Delaney has... He does have Bundesliga experience, but he's come from a club like Werder Bremen to a club like Borussia Dortmund, where the expectations are totally different. So to what extent does he feel ready to impose his experience on the squad? I don't know. Maybe that's new for him as well. Axel Witsel does have international experience, but his club football has been, for the past couple of years, in China. So you wonder, to what extent does he feel capable of stamping his authority on this team? But you are right to say that whether it is Reus or Delaney or Witsel or Berkey, yeah, absolutely none of them is stamping their authority on that team, and that does seem to be lacking.
Well, on that point, Stefan Busco had a good tweet in during this game, and it seems like this team is really missing Lukas Piszczek.
Oh, which huge.
We wouldn't have said this maybe last season.
No, but not
this,
at all.
But this season, he's not only performed much better, but he is by far the most senior member of that defense.
Yeah, I mean, well, Marcel Schmelzer as well. But you see, Marcel Schmelzer has just been left outside in the cold by Lucien Favre, which I think is interesting. But even him, even players like that, why is someone like Marcel Schmelzer not using his leadership and his experience to help a young team through this stage of the season? That's what frustrates me. I mean, Lukas Piszczek, obviously now a key missing piece, because it forces you to rejig the back line, and Hakimi might have to play right back, which, you know, can be disastrous, as we've seen. I think even if you make that case, my concern is actually a results one. I think Stefan Busco tweeted this. I think Lars Pullman tweeted this. We've talked about this. 0-0 against Nuremberg. 0-0 against Hannover. Lost to Dusseldorf. Lost to Augsburg. That, I don't care how young your team is. I don't care what stage of your development is. For a team as talented as Borussia Dortmund, irrespective of, you know, developmental arcs or individual errors, you cannot let that happen.
Yeah, I think there was an element to this game where they were really playing down to their opponents. And I think that has happened not only in just those games, but again, think against Wolfsburg. Of course, Wolfsburg has proven to be a good team this season. But they had one goal in the first half, didn't get more when they probably could have in Wolfsburg. There was also a games, they have some games coming up where they really have to, they play Stuttgart next week. Are we convinced that they're going to actually outclass Stuttgart after Stuttgart's 5-1 against Hannover?
I think purely just looking at results is a little bit too short term. It's all about saying that they only put one past Wolfsburg, but similarly, you look at Bayern Munich last week, they only put one past Hertha Berlin. Sometimes in a title race that is going to happen, and depends on the game, that's not necessarily a bad thing. But and purely in the short term, I think it will be a problem for Dortmund next week against Stuttgart, because they come against a totally new Stuttgart team, which will be travelling to Dortmund with a completely new state of mind after that 5-1 win over Hannover. I was thinking,
my only point with that Wolfsburg result was that at that time, Borussia Dortmund was in form, and in as in form as a Borussia Dortmund team this season.
But as good as they have played at times this season, I think we're forgetting that this entire Borussia Dortmund squad has only been together for 8 months, 7 months, 8 months. I think.
Yeah, but that's going to be the case every season.
Yeah, and then so I think it is an entirely, definitely a difficult situation for the entire club to be in, for the squad to be in. I think they've reached a point when they went 9 points clear of Bayern Munich or whatever it was. They found themselves in a position which they never expected themselves to be in. Not this season.
Maybe next year
or the year after, when they expect to build a club and
yeah, but then you've got to
and
adapt.
Challenge.
And that's what's frustrating
not
for
adapted.
Me.
Yeah, that's
and that's what I mean. Yeah, you can see that Borussia Dortmund are a bit like a team in the second division who just got promoted or who are mid-table and were not expecting to be
suddenly realising, oh crap.
We might be in that situation. They look like that team who've realised 10, 15 games out, oh my goodness, we're a year and a half early in our developmental plan for this club, and we don't know how to react.
But I think adapting to that now and taking that into account and working out a strategy of how we're going to deal with that psychologically, football wise, tactically, in terms of the injury issues that they have had. That for me, what are we now, 10 games in the season?
Yes.
To me, that is now absolutely key for Dortmund, the way they react to
that. It'll be the defining moment of Lucien Favre's career, I think.
Well, how do they fix this, though? Because they have the Champions League, the second leg against Tottenham. They're down 3-0 in that tie.
Scratch it,
right? I think we can all agree with that. So that means for the rest of the season, you have just the Bundesliga left. So how do you fix that? Time going to fix that?
I'm not a coach, I'm not going to give anything, you know, detailed in terms of how I would solve it, because there are far more qualified people than me to make those decisions. But, I mean, from the offset, to me, the most important thing just looks like getting this team mentally set. You know, get a game against Tottenham, even if you win 1-0, you know, just get the mentality right. Get the players coming off that pitch at the end of that game thinking, all right, yeah, we're back in. We're Borussia Dortmund. We're confident in what we do. We can do this. We are capable. Let's put those mistakes. Get them feeling good going into the Stuttgart game. Because if they do, and that group is together, they will batter Stuttgart. You know, but you need to get yourself prepared for that. It doesn't matter about whether you beat Spurs in terms of, you know, progressing. But give a performance in that game. European Nights is what this club lives for. It really wants to be there. It wants to be at that stage. It wants to be there hosting these games in Dortmund. Deliver. Do something to prep yourself for Stuttgart.
I think if the performance is right on Tuesday, I don't expect them to go through. But if the performance is right, if they come out with it with a 1-0 win or even a 2-1 win, I think that can play a major role going forward. And that means going back to the basics that Favre did so well at the very start of the season, when despite the fact that he clearly tried to focus on the defensive aspects at Borussia Dortmund, and then was lucky in the fact that he had the likes of Alcacer off the bench, he had the likes of Sancho coming into his own up front. He didn't really have to focus on the offensive at all. That seemed to work it all out for himself. That would be my approach to it. Use the Tottenham game as a just rehearsal. Go back to basics. Make sure the defence is sorted. Make sure you've got Delaney and Witzel knowing their role in front of that back four. And the talent is there up front for the goals to be scored themselves.
And get the confidence back.
And take that into the Stuttgart game.
Get their confidence back in those players that we just talked about. Hakimi, Sancho, Zagadou. Get those guys feeling good again. Because you can bet that in a young team, players who make individual errors that cost them the game, they're going to carry that. That's going to be hard. That's going to be really difficult for an 18-year-old to walk away, or a 19-year-old from that situation and not feel guilty. Get them in a situation they can walk away from a game feeling good again. Yeah, I delivered 5 ace crosses and I blocked that winger out of the game. Yeah, that's what I'm about. Get them feeling that going into a Saturday.
So because of Borussia Dortmund's form, they are now level on points with Bayern Munich with 10 games to go. The exciting title race that we predicted at the first...
Hey, we can't complain, right? For years.
I also think we did say, didn't we say a few months ago, we thought Bayern would actually go ahead of them. They've not done yet because of goal difference. But
we talked about, because obviously Bayern, you know, battered Gladbach, and we'll get on to that in a second. But we did talk about this a few weeks back in the pod, and I think we all said that Borussia Dortmund were going to lose their lead. Bayern would get level and overtake them by the time they played each other at the beginning of April.
Although I'm coming to form, it's now looking very difficult to see that if Borussia Dortmund could actually come from behind.
But then Bayern will... I still stand by this. I think that Bayern will eventually overtake Dortmund, but they will wobble. They will wobble. There'll be a couple results where we won't expect it and Bayern will draw, or they might even lose one because it's Kovac and it's the first time he's been in this situation. Okay, so that's worth remembering, even if he's got senior players. The same thing applies there. And Dortmund will have a chance, but I don't think they'll take it. I think that's how it's going to go. I think it's going to wobble.
One other interesting thing, Jonathan, you said at the beginning of the season when Dortmund were flying and when Bayern Munich were in their middle of their so-called crisis.
One of many.
Was that it's so incredible how quickly the narrative can switch.
Unbelievably.
I mean, it just took the winter break for Bayern Munich to find something. It still took them a while to find something, but to find something, get clicking again, even with a litany of injuries throughout the squad, and get back level with Borussia Dortmund. I mean, people, it's crazy how quickly the narrative can change.
People, where are all those people that said the Bundesliga was boring? I mean, where are you now? Stand up and be counted, because quite honestly, this season has been a thrill ride, so far as I'm concerned, at the top of the table. Yeah, I mean, it's been back and forth between two teams predominantly, although Gladbach hung their hat in the ring for a little bit before they bowed out. But no, it's exciting to see, because, you know, we weren't expecting Bayern to enter such a, you know, as you said, crisis mode. We weren't expecting them to enter it so soon, I don't think. And I don't think many were expecting them to recover so quickly either. And yet, watching them against Gladbach, Matt and I were talking about it at the time. I mean, the first 10-15 minutes of the first 5 minutes of both halves, it's like watching Bayern Munich from 3 years ago.
Yeah, so Bayern Munich won that game 5-1 in Gladbach.
5-1 against the third best team in Germany, basically.
But we have to start with what maybe determined the flow of the game.
Yeah, which but they should have scored before then, you know, before the corner, right?
Right. Okay. So maybe not. But that foul from Javi Martinez. Yeah.
Well, wasn't a foul.
I agree with John there. I think it's a little bit irrelevant given that the way that
Bayern was
we're talking about 60 seconds after kickoff here, and within 60 seconds, Bayern had created not just the first major chance of the game, which Jan Sommer saved really, really well.
Had a great game, by the way.
Which then led to... Well, if it wasn't for Jan Sommer, then the goal difference might have been such that Bayern would actually be top now.
Crazy.
Outright.
Crazy.
Within that first 60 seconds, you've got Sommer producing a save from Lewandowski, I think it was.
I think so, yeah. He missed three chances before
and then
scored.
Obviously from the resulting corner, that's when we're talking about
the push from Javi Martinez, the push that you're talking about,
Davis. Yeah, I mean, I think we could debate it all that long. My personal opinion is that it's everyone's making a molehill out of nothing. I think these pushes happen, and if you're going to start putting,
I think it's a mountain out of a molehill.
A mountain of a molehill.
I think a molehill out of nothing is also quite good, though. I mean, you've got flat ground, and then suddenly you've got a molehill. It's not a mountain. Yeah.
It's kind of all this weekend.
It's important on a football pitch. That's why they don't want any molehills in the pitch.
I think if you start giving them, either you start giving them all, in which case we're into a whole different ball game. Then
it becomes basketball. Basically.
Exactly. Yeah, so exactly. I think we're missing the point a little bit with that. I think the major point is that we saw a Bayern Munich there that we haven't seen in quite a few years, and that we certainly haven't seen under Niko Kovac.
Yeah.
Bayern Munich and Kovac both got a lot of praise, rightly, I think, for the performance away at Anfield in the Champions League.
That's a good point.
But that was tinged with a little bit of a pinch of salt when people were saying that, okay, that was Niko Kovac playing Eintracht Frankfurt football with Bayern Munich footballers. I think that was fair.
Which is true.
I don't think that's unfair. But either way, Gladbach, a team where if there is a bogey team for Bayern Munich, it is Borussia Mönchengladbach.
Yeah.
That was the complete opposite, wasn't it? The way they went for it, it could have been so much more than five. If it wasn't for Jan Sommer, who's been one of the outstanding goalkeepers in the Bundesliga this year, it could have been more.
Yeah.
The way they went for, and this was a team lacking Goretzka, missing Ribery, missing Robin.
Missing Coman
as well.
Gnabry was great.
Gnabry was absolutely outstanding. So every time.
Even Thomas Müller.
Thomas Müller was brilliant.
He was
best game of the season.
He was absolutely key to it, but Thomas Müller functioned perfectly as that pivot that I think that he wants to be, that he knows he can be.
Yeah. Right.
That Bayern want him to be, and that we all know he can be, but that for one reason or the other, he's either not done because he's been pushed out either left or right too much on occasion. But I think against Gladbach he was perfect. He didn't just bring Lewandowski into the game even more than usual.
Yeah, he really did.
He didn't just set up dangerous moments and a goal himself and score one himself. He also provided that pivot that Serge Gnabry could move around, so on the transition, which is not a style of football that you necessarily associate with Kovac or Bayern, but against Gladbach, I thought this was absolutely key. Some of the times that you saw Gnabry flying forward, it was always around that pivot of Thomas Müller in the middle in his favoured role.
One of the things that
impressive things, which is quite worrying. It's hard for the league.
It's hard to pinpoint exactly what Thomas Müller does so well, but I think the two things that he does so well, he both showcased in this game, which was one, his movement is, I think, really, he has a really intelligent way of moving, and he really took advantage of Oscar Wendt on the left side. And then he has this really unique way of combining with people. It doesn't look good.
Yeah, no, but it's effective.
But it's really effective. Yeah. And he does just enough to create the space that, like you said, Serge Gnabry can run into space next to him and get in on goal. And it's really, it's those two things that I think that have been missing from Thomas Müller. And in the Ancelotti years for sure, but also in the early in Niko Kovac's tenure.
What a time for Niko Kovac to basically declare himself a much better coach than I think so many people gave him credit for, because I think he deserves a lot of credit for going from Anfield and that performance to this in a short period of time. It's not easy, even with a squad as good as Bayern Munich's, to play two completely different styles of play and be so effective in both of them. I mean, that is very difficult, even with a squad as talented as Bayern, especially for a coach as young and, let's be honest, relatively inexperienced as a club coach, Niko Kovac. So hats off to him, because he's got everything going at the right moment. Getting Thomas Müller playing well is so important, because I think your points are spot on about what you said about Müller, but the biggest thing for me is how well Lewandowski played off him. I mean, he should have scored about five chances, but he was in the game so much more than he has been of late because of the way that Müller was playing. And if you're getting Robert Lewandowski in front of goal five, six, seven times a game, you're not going to come up against Jan Sommer every week. So that's going to equal a hatful of goals for Bayern Munich. And all of this being done without Robin and Ribery,
I think,
crazy.
I was going to point out in mitigation, as impressive as Bayern Munich were, and I do think it is quite worrying for the rest of the league going forward, just how good
and
they
Liverpool.
Were. well, we'll come on to that in a second, thing, won't we? In terms of the Champions League, but Gladbach did not help themselves.
No,
they did not. That's so true.
Gladbach have impressed so much this season.
Ever since I wrote about them. They've been terrible.
The curse of John Arden is clearly struck again.
Yeah, Alisson Player. I think I put my eggs in the Alisson Player basket
but
too.
So much this season, but mainly going forward. In the past two games, they lost at home to Hertha 3-0, and at home also 3-0 against. Who was it?
Wolfsburg, wasn't it? That was away, wasn't it, Wolfsburg? And then they lost someone 1-1. And there was Frankfurt away 1-1. Remember, you were there
for that one. Gladbach definitely had 2-3-0 defeats at home.
Then it was Wolfsburg.
Even going back to before Christmas, when Gladbach had this 100% winning home record, I remember sort of working out back then before Christmas that even a lot of those wins were coming. Even if they were by two or three goals, the goals would be scored in the second half. Mm. So that means when the opposition was either tiring or moving forward and being a bit more adventurous
exposing themselves and exposing the gaps in behind.
And I think, as does Gladbach have been, they were relying on those gaps being opened up by teams. But that also meant that as much as they were going forward, and they have been so impressive going forward, but with Flavio Neuhaus in particular standing out, and Denis Zakaria in particular, feeding that front three of Raphael, Stindl, and Hazard, and Player as well.
Yeah. Hoffman.
But being that top heavy, they got away with it in the first half of the season, but Bayern Munich exploited that even more.
And they're not the first side to do so
than Hertha Berlin did. Yeah.
Hertha Berlin and Wolfsburg. You were right on both on both accounts. Both 3-0 losses. Also, you also think about that game against Frankfurt where they won in the last minute or last
they
few
drew.
Minutes.
Drew in the last.
Drew. Sorry. They drew in the last few minutes. Gladbach have definitely not looked good in the second half of the season, to say the least.
I wouldn't say not look good. I think they've been a little bit exposed.
Yeah, exposed.
The weaknesses that they were hiding with their really impressive offensive performances were exposed a little bit. And Bayern did that better than any, apart from Hertha Berlin, who were also really, really impressive. But in Thomas Müller in the middle, Bayern had a player that was different calibre than anything Hertha Berlin had, and the scoreline reflects that.
To go back to Thomas Müller for a second, this reminds me of the discussion we had in the Hoffenheim game at the start of the second half of the season, how Thomas Müller posed that mismatch in the Hoffenheim game as well, and because of how spread out Hoffenheim was, having Thomas Müller not as that traditional stretch the play winger, having him be out there really caused teams problems. This is exactly what happened before. And now you think for the rest of the season, they're playing against Liverpool, they play against Borussia Dortmund, who, they have either Abdou Diallo as a left back, or they're going to have Achraf Hakimi if Lucas Piszczek comes back. This could be, the last 10 games for Thomas Müller could be really, really good.
Could change his, he's not going to go anywhere, but it could change once again. You talked about narrative earlier. You know, people have written off Thomas Müller after a poor World Cup, and he hasn't played well consistently for a while. I mean, it's the kind of thing that will change the narrative again, and everybody will start using the word Raumdeuter and Thomas Müller again. I mean, it's how fickle sometimes football can be. But I think a lot of it comes down to, again, to Niko Kovac and the way that he wants this team to play. He's got a lot of decisions to make, I think, you know, get into that stage of the season where you're going to start to make slightly grander claims. But I think for both Lucien Favre and Niko Kovac, these are career-defining months because the trajectory of where they go from here and the clubs that they're at will be severely altered as a result of what happens. I mean, Niko Kovac, I think, has already shown enough to suggest that he should be given a summer and the whole of next season. Whether he will get that or not, I don't know. But I have the feeling that if he can pull it out of the bag here and win the league and get them into the semi-finals of the Champions League and win the cup, he's going to have, you know, 2 or 3 years at Bayern Munich, and deservedly so. But he's got to get it right, you know, and Thomas Müller is one of those decisions. How is he going to get the most out of him? Because do you just play him the same way for the next 10 games? Because any team has a good video analysis and they can watch and figure out how to take him out of the game if they want to. He's got to make strong decisions, and if he can get the most out of Müller, then that's going to have a knock-on effect for the rest of the team.
So speaking of trajectories, as we said, 10 games to go in the season. The next three games for Bayern Munich are against Wolfsburg, Mainz, and Freiburg. And for Dortmund, they're against Stuttgart, Hertha Berlin, and Wolfsburg. And that is before the April 6th Klassiker in the second half of the season, which could really swing the title race one way or another. So how do you see the next month going for each of these teams?
I think on paper it's clear that Bayern have, the Wolfsburg game aside, the much easier run up to that game against Dortmund. I struggle to see how Bayern won't go into that game ahead of Borussia Dortmund, which will mean that'll be a make and break game for Borussia Dortmund's entire season. As disappointing as it could end up being for Dortmund, I think that the entire season is actually more indicative in terms of the way Bayern and Kovac are going to go forward than the way Favre and Dortmund are going to go forward. Nobody expected Dortmund to even be in the position, like I said, where they had a lead to give away to Bayern. So as disappointing as it would be, I think for them and also for a lot of neutrals, I think watching the Bundesliga, I don't think it'll change that much in the overall trajectory of the way Borussia Dortmund as a club are going. They've overdone themselves this season so far in terms of Bayern Munich. I think John's right to say that this is another little tiny feather in Niko Kovac's cap. They're coming into form at exactly the right time. They found themselves level on points with 10 games to go, exactly the right time. This little boost in confidence has come for them at exactly the right time ahead of the second leg against Liverpool, which on current form, and also given Liverpool's current form, coming off the back of 2-0 draws, I would see Bayern Munich as favourites now, which might not necessarily have been the case after the first leg. And I get the impression that a lot of things are falling slowly into place if not for Bayern Munich as a whole, but definitely for Niko Kovac. I think in terms of looking beyond Kovac, Salihamidzic, I don't see
Can't
a future
see him
there
staying there
for
enough.
At Bayern Munich, and change has to be made even further above in the hierarchy as well. But in terms of Kovac, this is slowly but quite surely and quite ominously for the rest of the league coming together, isn't it?
If the Klassiker was tomorrow,
Bayern Munich would still win if it was tomorrow. I stand by the fact that the psychological impact on this team, on this Borussia Dortmund team, is I think from an outside position, obviously I don't have any insider knowledge, but from an outsider position, I think it's too great for a team this young and this inexperienced to be able to handle. And I think that's something else. I mean, we have talked about Kovac, but the experience of this Bayern Munich team is not to be underestimated. You have Thomas Müller there. You have Robert Lewandowski, who's now the third all-time leading goal scorer for Bayern in the Bundesliga. You've got players who have vast amounts of experience. Manuel Neuer is a World Cup winner. Mats Hummels, Jerome Boateng, Javi Martinez, Thiago. These are players who have so much experience when it comes to crunch situations, who can deliver. And if one doesn't, there's another one. And Dortmund don't have that. You know, and you talked about the next three fixtures. I can see Dortmund drawing against Hertha. I can see them losing to Wolfsburg. And I can see them beating Stuttgart. But that's the wrong way round in terms of, you know, because Stuttgart's the first game. That's not the way that you want to play going into the Bayern game. Whereas I can see Bayern beating Freiburg and Mainz and maybe drawing with Wolfsburg. But that's enough. Because 7 points will beat Dortmund's 4. And then you've got a 3-point lead going into the Klassiker, and then everything is, you know, to play for, as it were. And Dortmund know that if they lose that game, there's a very good chance that they won't get anywhere near winning the title again. And that is a lot of pressure to put on a Borussia Dortmund team. At the moment, I don't think there's much evidence to suggest that they have it in them to handle that pressure. But there's 10 games to go, and as Matt said earlier, there is enough time for them to get it right. And it starts with Tottenham on Tuesday.
All right, we spent a lot of time on the eastern side of the Ruhr Valley. Let's go more to the middle and go to Gelsenkirchen, because as we were in Freiburg, it all kicked off because Christian Heidel, the Sportvorstand, which we believe is sporting director, but who knows what that role actually means at that club, he stepped down from that role. And they have found a replacement, Jochen Schneider, but who knows if they're going to make Heidel's role two positions or if they're going to make it one position. On the pitch, Schalke came up with another terrible performance, and it was at Dusseldorf again, causing a lot of problems in the Bundesliga.
Dusseldorf have 22 points in the last 10 games. Friedhelm Funkel is the coach of the year. Yeah. Hands down.
So
sorry, separate note, but still.
Jonathan, you tweeted afterwards, and I think this was very, very appropriate, that Xhaka really do look broken.
Mm. It feels like it. I mean, Matt wrote a detailed piece afterwards explaining, you know, what the club is, why the club is where it's at now, and what they've left themselves as options going forward. And, you know, the point is they haven't really left themselves very much. They do feel broken. Because I remember being in Schalke, however many seasons it was ago now, two seasons ago, when Weinzierl arrived with Heidel. This was the dream team. I bought into it. I did a piece, and I remember I did a piece to camera, actually. I spoke to Schalke fans, and people, they were all up for it. You know, they believe Marcus Weinzierl did a great job with Augsburg. Down-to-earth guy. Coming in here, he can do the job. And you know what? Even if there was any lingering doubts, they were like, we've got Christian Heidel. He's got a great nose for deals. We're gonna be in a great situation.
And great record at Mainz.
Great record at Mainz. You know, Mainz have been seen as this sort of birthing club for the Bundesliga, given all of the great things that have come out of there in Tuchel and Klopp and all of that. So I think there was a lot of positivity. And it didn't work. None of it worked. Weinzierl didn't work. And you can potentially say, okay, you know what? It doesn't always work with coaches. That's fine. But Christian Heidel didn't work. Christian Heidel bought players that were suited for Mainz, not for Schalke. This is a side that wants to be in the Champions League year after year. Nothing worked. And I think the reason I said that they look broken was because whatever Tedesco did last season, and, you know, arguably what he did last season was make them just defensively resolute and be better than most of the other teams, but considerably worse than the best team. That hasn't advanced. There was no development in that stage of tactical advancement. You know, there wasn't anything further than that, and they just got exposed. The players don't look like they are buying into what he's delivering. It feels like whatever he's delivering isn't working as well. There's so many question marks. And when you lose 4-0 at home to Dusseldorf, with, you know, no disrespect to Fortuna, because as I said before this, they are playing probably one of the best seasons in terms of over expectations that we've ever seen. They have no right being a mid-table. There's a whole conversation to be had about what that means for the mediocrity of the Bundesliga, but fair play to them for doing their job. The way that Schalke collapsed in the last half an hour, it felt like it was a symbol for everything that's happened at this club in the last 2 or 3 years. And in fact, it feels like the club itself, we talked about it in recent performances, the Man City game. That game in the Champions League was Schalke's history in 90 minutes. We've got players. Oh, we're positive. We can win. We might win. We won't win. We haven't won. We've drawn. No, we've lost. And that's how it feels. You know, their title against Bayern that they didn't win, and they're called the club who the champions of the hearts, everybody in Germany, because they captured the hearts of people, and they lost the title in the last minute because Bayern Munich scored an indirect free kick. That's the kind of stuff that stays with you. And this is a club that just feels like everything that's happened in their life just got weighed down on them. And the players, even if they don't remember it, everybody in the stadium, that moment with Tedesco after the game, going to the fans, abuse, dealing with it. Great, hats off to him for dealing with it and going there and, you know, facing up to it. But everything about this club just felt like it was resetting.
Yeah. Matt, you said before the podcast that this club seems to need to reset, but they got their reset 2 years ago, yeah. Or 2 years ago, didn't they?
They got a reset 2 years ago. Got a reset 3 years ago. Before that, like John said, the first reset was meant to be the magical duo of Christian Heidel and Marcus Weinzierl, which was quickly decided that the coach was the problem and Marcus Weinzierl was sacked. Christian Heidel then brought in Domenico Tedesco, and this was the new magic couple in Gelsenkirchen. And now it would seem a year and a half later, Schalke have decided that the coach is not the problem at the moment, but rather the common denominator is the sporting director, who has spent over 150 million euros on new talent. Well, I think talent is being very, very, very kind.
Yeah, I mean, I have their transfers up. I mean, he came in. So Christian Heidel came in, and his headline transfer was Brilembolo, who has barely played.
I'm not sure we can blame him for being Brilembolo being injured, but he spent a lot of money.
Yeah,
on Bolo
has been injured a lot, but
Yevhen Konoplyanka spending as much as him as you spent on Kevin Prince-Boateng
earlier. Even most of the lads. I've said it before on this podcast. I think just last summer's transfer
from
Schalke was absolutely indicative of the problems that they've got. Stuart Sedar, Steven Skripsky from Union Berlin.
Omar Mascarell.
Omar Mascarell from Frankfurt.
Sebastian Rudy.
Even Sebastian Rudy, Mark Hoot up front.
Even Salif Sané, who even, I really liked.
Yeah.
Even Salif Sané, who I thought was actually quite solid at Hanover last season.
But there's not Champions League signings, are they?
Yeah, but they're not Champions League. They're barely even mid-table Bundesliga.
Exactly, that's the problem.
And that's been reflected now in where they are. Christian Heidel's fallen on his sword, and I think part of me thinks fair play to him. He's obviously recognised that he takes responsibility for this. He is a man who spent, I think, was it 14 years? Or it was definitely over a decade, wasn't it?
At Mainz.
And he's unfortunately, as far as I'm concerned, he's brought Mainz-level ambition to Schalke, which means that purely in terms of what's gone on in the past weeks, so obviously Christian Heidel tendered his resignation even before the 3-0 defeat away to Mainz.
Yeah.
Tedesco was made aware of that. The very fact that the Schalke's board have accepted that resignation, to me that says that they've decided that, right, is the problem Tedesco, i.e. the coach, again, like with Weinziel, or is the problem the sporting director? To me, the fact that they accepted Heidel's resignation suggests that they have decided that the sporting director is the issue, which means that it would seem that, for the time being, Domenico Tedesco is safe. Whether that's because they've decided that the sporting director is the problem, or because there's technically now nobody to fire Domenico Tedesco, I'm not sure.
Slash nobody to replace him.
And I think...
theoretically.
I think for... yeah, that we'll come on to that in a second, I think. I think my first question is they're right to decide that.
Yep.
I think Heidel has had the time and the money and got it wrong and he's fallen on his sword. I think that's absolutely fair and fair play to him. He's resigned. He's I think he's accepted no bonus payment or anything like that. And so he's moved on. I think that's absolutely fair. But the question marks will hover over Domenico Tedesco. I think, yeah, he was impressive last season in that he dragged the most out of a pretty much thrown together Schalke side with based on stability, and doing the bare minimum up front. It took him to second.
Probably says more
about the Bundesliga than it does about Domenico Tedesco
That's
and Schalke.
The problem, isn't it? Yep.
This season, everyone at Schalke was expecting more from both coach and from team. Now, on the one hand, you can say that the sort of players that Domenico Tedesco has been given in the likes of Oot and Skripsky and Rudy and Serdar and Mascarell, they're not good enough. I think that's fair. But also, I think there's been, all throughout the entire season, a complete lack of idea going forward. Not once this season have I got the impression that Domenico Tedesco has given this team a proper plan going forward. I don't know what Schalke stand for going forward. I don't know what players to look for.
Yeah, do they have a target
when Schalke attack?
That's a good point.
What are they based around? Yeah. Are they based around Guido Bergstaller up front? Yeah. Is that the plan? Playing long balls forward towards a big man.
It seemed like the plan last year.
Do they want? Yeah, last year worked okay. Like I said, it worked okay because that was just a bit of a transition of a year. Are they looking towards Mark Hoot, in which case is he a forward or is he a number 10? Where do they want him to be? Are they looking to use the wings more, in which case if that's kind of Pianca or Caligiuri, then are the two of them not also meant to be fulfilling defensive roles too, where they've been caught out a million times? I struggle to see going forward any sort of plan or idea or tactical philosophy from Schalke, and that was exposed. That was exposed completely, not by Mike, but Dusseldorf, were absolutely relentless. And it says so much that
the number one
was in midfield. Stambouli was in midfield.
Bentaleb was in midfield.
And Bentaleb, and the two of them were all over the place, time and time again. It was a back three because Caligiuri and whoever was at left back were
Ochepka
were absolutely miles away. So it was purely a back three.
Oh, sorry, no, Mendil was the
left back. Was it Mendil?
Yeah, sorry.
Either way, that back three was protected by absolutely nobody. And it showed that every time that Dusseldorf won the ball in midfield, they were straight through in a 4-on-3 situation, which was then made even worse five Salif Sané's positioning for at least
two of
the goals.
He kept tucking in.
Also, the number one thing you can
the whole thing is a complete and utter mess.
Well, the one thing too is
Schalke fans listening to this crying their eyes out.
Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh at Schalke's misery, but the number one thing also, you mentioned the coaching, but the number one thing you cannot do against Dusseldorf, and they've proven this throughout the season. Bayern Munich had trouble with this.
Yeah, you
cannot give the ball away to them.
Yeah, exactly.
You cannot give the ball away in midfield because they are quick enough. Yeah. Benito Raman is smart enough to get the ball forward to the right person in the right space.
Normally Luka Bakio.
And Luka Bakio is skillful enough to tuck it away.
Yeah,
you cannot give the ball away.
Because that's what I mean. Why haven't Schalke seen this come in?
Exactly.
They've seen Dusseldorf do this to Bayern. They've seen him doing it to Dortmund. They were good. It was quite obvious they were going to They were going to come to Gelsenkirchen with the same tactics, especially given they got smashed 4-1 there in the cup. It was quite obvious what they were going to do there. And still...
But there is something to be said about Tedesco. I mean, I know we've just gone all in, and I think you're right to say that Heidel is right to take the blame
fall.
For this, to take the fall for this, because he was the one who recruited mediocre players. But, you know, Weston McKennie is an excellent player because of Tedesco's
having
coaching,
a good season.
Right?
Katucu
come through, looks really good, youth player. I know he's only played a handful.
He's played three games.
Yeah, I know, but that progression, the transition, getting him into the first team. I know I don't want to make any grand judgments, but the transition, getting him to be first team ready. I mean, his goal against
Bayern.
Is that
for you then a suggestion that maybe, given a bit more time, that Tedesco should get
And Bentaleb, I know he had a poor game against Dusseldorf, but against Man City, and there have been times this season where he's looked by far and away the best midfielder in that team. I think there have been instances and players who have shown themselves to have responded positively to coaching from Domenico Tedesco. And I think it's not unfair to say that even if the first season was a transitional season, he was thrown in at the deep end, coming from 14 games or 11 games at Exkeberga. Can't even say it.
Exkeberga.
There you go. Can't even say it. I'm not eating any beers today. Coming from there and being thrown into Schalke and getting them to second. Yeah, we can have a conversation about how mediocre the rest of the Bundesliga is, but he still did an excellent job with that team, playing a simple, basic way to do that. So I think there is something in Tedesco's coaching. There is something there. And that's why we were talking about this on the way home from work on Saturday. I think it's tempting to give him another season with a full summer and the correct sporting director, come up with a plan and a philosophy of how you want to play and get the players that actually represent that. Don't buy players that you think are going to be good in 3 years, or get players that are going to deliver for you and get Schalke to be a consistent top four team. If it doesn't work, then you can say we've given him the right opportunity, because I think by sacking Heidel, you've effectively said we're taking 90% of the responsibility away from the head coach, because it's really about the individuals, about the players that we've signed. And as you said the other week, now it's 100% Heidel's team in terms of players. So I give him a bit more time.
So, but one thing that I read about Tedesco in his first season was that how much of a motivator he was when there was a bad game or a bad training. There he wasn't necessarily on them. He would have like peanut butter and jelly parties or something like or hamburger parties.
Well, his communication's supposed to be really good,
really good,
right? But you do hear reports now that apparently the dressing room is really divided.
Yeah, that's what I want to get onto. Yeah,
there's a really strange contradiction. I mean, we do keep hearing reports seeping out that there are factions within the dressing room, surely I imagine not helped by the fact that Tedesco has made this conscious decision to sideline two huge talismen in Benedikt Höwedes
and
Ralf Fährmann. Obviously, Höwedes has been shoved straight out of the club to Spartak Moscow, and Locomotive Moscow, and Fährmann's been demoted to second choice goalkeeper. These things keep coming out. I think it's very interesting. I was saying to John the other night that I think this smacks a little bit of Thomas Tuchel and the way that he went about dealing with his Borussia Dortmund players in terms of man management. I see a lot of similarities there, not necessarily in terms of quality of coach yet. I think Tuchel's proven a lot more. Tedesco still has a lot to prove, a lot more to learn, a lot more to develop. But you do get the impression, and I think when you see him up close, Tedesco, and when he's talking to the press, he is very sort of delicate in what he says. He's very, very, very precise, really precise, really meticulous. You get the impression that he knows exactly what he wants. So therefore, I can, similar with Tuchel, I can imagine how that can somehow come create a problem with the team if he's then not in a position to communicate exactly these meticulous needs, if he can't communicate that across to the players.
I would say there's one striking difference between the two is Thomas Tuchel never stood in front of the yellow wall when he was at Dortmund. He never responded to the fans. He was never connection. There was never a connection.
Yeah, he was accused of being completely robotic.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been some unfair criticism of Tuchel based on how cold, in speech marks, he was accused of being to his players. I think he's just a different type of person, and I think anyone who steps into that club after Klopp is always going to be cold. I think Tedesco did connect with the fans, or at least he was willing to engage. You know, not just after that defeat to Dusseldorf. We've seen him in that situation before. He's open to the dialogue. Yeah. And that makes me think he is open to the dialogue when it comes to his players as well. I mean, even small things, you know, like DeSanto. DeSanto, remember when he got subbed off and he was annoyed? He started mouthing off on the bench. You know, he seems like he knows how to... Tedesco, he knows how to communicate. He knows how to handle these situations. I remain optimistic.
Yeah, I think for those reasons, I agree. I think
Schalke is such a difficult club to coach.
It is. I think they've made the right decision for the time being in deciding that Heidel was the major issue there. He had the money, he had the players, he had the chance, blew it. I think that's fair.
Yeah. But you've got to respond against Bremen. That's the next game.
They have to respond. They have to on next season.
Which will be difficult.
Personally, I wouldn't. Despite the criticisms I've pointed out regarding Tedesco, I think they all stand. But I think I do think Schalke are probably right to decide that Heidel was the bigger issue. Let Tedesco do this for one more year. Give him one more year with a new sporting director or a sporting director and a football manager, or whatever you're going to call it. They want to bring in a separate person, even in between the level of coach and board. From Leverkusen has been mentioned. Mm. Even Sven Mislintat has been mentioned.
Yeah, Jochen Schneider was the guy that has technically taken the position that Christian Heidel.
He strikes me as someone who's going to be more board orientated than bench.
Exactly. So I think it's likely that Schalke will bring in another position between Tedesco and the board.
Yeah.
And I think Tedesco can work well with that person to get the right players Schalke need to get them in summer, providing they stay up. They're only 4 points clear now of the playoff place.
4 points clear, and of the teams that are currently not in the bottom three, they have the worst goal difference, minus 14. Granted, Stuttgart's goal difference is twice worse.
You have to have
a
conversation about what you do now. We've talked about this, right? Because
it's time for another reset, isn't it? Which says so much about Schalke. It's a complete mess.
It's a massive mess.
We're looking out like a third or fourth reset in 5 years.
And that's not bringing anyone stability, which is why I do think unless you get to a situation where, and I think some people would argue, some Schalke fans would certainly argue that they're already there, that Schalke reach a point where this team is really not responding at all.
Matt Ford is just dying quietly in the corner. I think
the
Schalke talk is really, really doing a number on Matt Ford.
Sorry, had a cold.
I think if you get to the point where Schalke's team fails to respond at all, and you're in danger of reaching the playoff spot, then you can start to suggest that Tedesco should go. Because obviously Schalke dropping out of the first flight would be catastrophic. But you've got to balance it. Because if you sack Tedesco after the Bremen game because you lose 2-0 and it's not great, do you just bring someone in for 8 games? Yeah. And if so, that's a short-term thing. You know, that's a short-term mindset again without a long-term plan in place. Now, of course, you can argue, well, we need a short-term plan in place because we don't want to get relegated and we need someone to come in and we'll just give Hoop Stevens a call. He'll come in and save us. That's fine.
Well, the name I had mentioned was Mike Buskins, but also Roger Schmidt.
Roger Schmidt, I've also heard that. But that, again...
All of whom would be just a sideways step.
Yeah, and that's a sideways step, and that's what I don't think Schalke need right now. I would rather take no step, as in don't fire Tedesco, stick with him, ride it out, because I don't think you're going to get relegated. I just don't. I think
for that, the three beneath them are far too bad.
I think there are two. Yeah, I think there are three, maybe four teams are in and around them who are worse than them. I think they won't get relegated. Stick with Tedesco, ride it out, and just chalk this season up as being one of the toughest seasons you've endured. Give him until end of next season, and then you can make a real assessment. Because what will frustrate me is if Schalke fire him after the Bremen game, bring someone in for 8 weeks, and then relieve them at the end of the season and then make a new appointment. Because I struggle to feel like there's a long-term plan in place if that's the decision being made. And, you know, this club needs stability and not, you know, change all the time.
Yeah, it's not like, and it's not like a new coach is going to fare much better. I mean, you have...
No, because it's the players, you know...
Well, I'm also looking at their fixture list. Yeah. I mean, they still have to play Leverkusen away. They still have to go to Dortmund away.
Who did they finish? Who are their last three games?
Yeah, their last three games are against Augsburg at home. That's a game that they could that could be a relegation
battle.
That's
a big game, yeah.
Then Leverkusen away, as I mentioned.
Don't want to have that.
And they finished at Stuttgart at home. Again, it could be another relegation battle. So
huge game.
It's not like a coach, like you said. I mean, Mike Buskins, who you mentioned, I mean, he's been an interim coach for them before in 2009, but he has barely any experience, especially recently over the past decade, in the top flight.
Mike Buskins would be an appointment purely made on emotion and nostalgia. That would literally just be like, let's get someone. He was in the 97 team, right?
Yeah. By the way, they still have to face Frankfurt too. That's one of their next three games as well.
Wow. And for all those reasons, I think ultimately, yeah, stick with Tedesco, even if it does at the moment seem like the absolute default. Yeah. But I think anything else than doing that would signal just even more chaos at Schalke. So yeah, for the time being, stick with Tedesco, but he's also on his last chance.
All right, that'll do it for this week's Tribuna Weekly. Thank you so much, by the way, for all of the feedback that you guys gave on our Freiburg trip. It was a ton of fun, and we are so happy that you guys enjoyed that episode. But that'll do it for this week. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. And if you do, please leave us a friendly review. You can also like our Tribuna Podcast Facebook page. Follow us on Twitter at Tribuna Podcast. You can find Matt Ford on Twitter at Matt_4D, Jonathan Harding at JohnBlog66, 2 G's and 2 6's, and I'm at Davis_Benopto. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.